Welcome back to another episode of Cultivating Change, everyone. I'm your host, Alex Corey, and it is my pleasure and honor to be able to bring to you the most practical solutions I've found for decentralizing, becoming more sovereign, stepping into your own power day by day. And one of the first real game-changing sources for me for that was nutrition, microgreens especially. When I first moved to Asheville, microgreens was my entry point into the regenerative and sustainable agriculture movement here, and it's bustling movement. It wasn't until recently that I started looking for someone to take over the microgreens, just because my interests have since changed in the last 4 years, and I'm now into permaculture, larger projects, living water, solar, health coaching, all the other avenues for which you know I'm extremely interested. In about March, I was exposed to this gentleman who we have on the podcast today, who is Jesse Siegel from Sprout Culture. He has a very rich family history of microgreens, and my farm, KC Gardens, has merged into his. I'm still working with them every day and enjoying every minute of it. But in this podcast, we're going to go over his story, his entrance into microgreens, and you'll see that our histories are quite similar, our paths and our interests and our turning points, basically everything about it. And we're going to do a whole nerd out session about the fun of growing microgreens and just of growing living food. Enjoy this one with Jesse Siegel of Sprout Culture. We are here with Jesse Siegel of Sprout Culture, and the story of how KC Gardens, my microgreen farm, found Sprout Culture is pure happenstance. So one random Instagram post by a local co-op community agricultural source here called Patchwork Alliance, which is a pretty cool organization. If you guys haven't seen them, if you're in the Western North Carolina, I'll put the links to them below. That is a fantastic local food resource for pickup and online delivery. Every sort of organic, non-GMO, sustainable and regenerative agriculture project you can think of. But one post by them, and I found Jesse, and then he has a fantastic story, family story and personal story of how microgreens came into his life, and I'll let you take it away.
Okay, well, thanks, Alex. I appreciate it. Interesting story about how microgreens came into my life. Well, let me take you back to my childhood, my birth, actually. I like to say that I was born into the culture, a Sprout Culture. And actually, that's what I chose for my name, Sprout Culture. This last January, my mom pulled out a picture of me as a baby, 1 year old, 2 years old, in my diaper, standing in my parents' greenhouse in Santa Barbara, California. It was a large hoop house, and my parents, my mom was doing marketing, my dad was growing and producing for their microgreen and sprout business. There I am in just the happiest place in my life. And then that inspired me to resurrect and reimagine my parents' business, which they ran for 4 years in Santa Barbara, California. My dad decided to close up shop because the entrepreneurial life was too risky, too difficult,
sure,
too unforgiving. I don't know. I haven't really sat down and talked with him about that, but I do want to get to the really understand what happened. But they ran the business for 4 years, and they had 4 employees. They had a delivery van, and partnerships with different grocery store chains like Fred Meyer Grocery Store, yeah, which is a really big chain on the West Coast, and some others. They were growing 7,000 pounds a month.
Yeah, that's an obscene number for my brain, because I can't even fathom moving that, cutting that much weight, even automated. That's just a lot of pounds of greens.
Yeah. So It's a lot. And I don't know how close I am to that, but the fact is that my parents were doing this, and then my dad quit it, and that changed my life from that point forward. I had to move with my family wherever they went. That's something that has led me to my to where I'm at right now. Is there was a time in my life I wasn't authentic with what I was born for, yeah. What my passion was, and I didn't really know what my passion was. I just knew I needed to get out there, and so through trial and error, through walking different paths and mm-hmm. and wearing different hats and trying new things, I was able to land where I'm at now, with the occasional push and nudge from yeah. the universe. And there's been a lot of amazing people in my life who've supported me to get to where I'm at right now. Yeah. I like to say I'm standing on the shoulders of giants. I think we all are.
Yeah, everyone is. There's always, you're like, how did I get here? Like, if you just look back at the last 5 years and you just look around, you're like, how did I end up growing racks of microgreens in Asheville? Yeah, and I did that multiple times whenever I was growing. So how did you end up growing multiple racks of microgreens in Asheville?
Well, I think I'm getting to that point. It's a winding road. Yeah. What I see as one of the most healthy, nutrient-dense foods yeah. on the planet.
As far as something that has very little barrier for entry, you can argue that spirulina or chlorella or some interesting blue-green algae or mm-hmm. of that nature could be higher per weight, but most people won't eat those. You know, they'll throw them in a smoothie. That's a very specific subset.
Yep.
Yeah, microgreens are the most nutrient dense without a huge barrier for entry that even kids don't have a problem eating because they're crunchy. So it's the best of all.
It's a functional food.
It's a functional food. You can use them for literally anything.
Right. And so they're also making supplements.
Yep.
Because of the sulforaphane. Yeah. Sulforaphane is being shown by all these different research articles coming out about how powerful it is to reverse mm-hmm. cancer, symptoms of autism, mm-hmm. Alzheimer's.
I did an entire video on
hypertension,
that.
Yeah. Diabetes. It's a huge list. Yep. And this makes it easy to get the high quantity or high volume of sulforaphane into your diet without having to eat
right heads of broccoli
right. Exactly. I read somewhere that it takes 1.5 pounds of broccoli to get the same amount of microgreen of sulforaphane and just overall nutrition as 1 ounce
yeah
of microgreens.
The 300
brat in the brassica family.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. I think it was when I did the comparison video, they were comparing 100 grams of broccoli micros to 100 grams of broccoli, and it was a ridiculous ratio. Yeah, you would have to do like 10x the broccoli florets yeah. to get the same sulforaphane content.
But then you're also usually cooking right. broccoli, and when you expose sulforaphane to heat,
yeah.
it reduces the potency.
Right. Yeah, antioxidants in general don't like heat.
Yeah. Right.
Which is kind of the same thing with olive oil or any other polyphenol antioxidant rich food is high heat will denature them. So mm-hmm. you kind of just take away all the benefits. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, raw in some cases is definitely where it's at. Unless you have some interesting autoimmune disease, like a former partner couldn't do raw brassicas because of iodine absorption. And there's some interesting research around what those antioxidants are. That's for another podcast, but they're not purely beneficial. They're plant defense compounds. So if you have sensitivities to some of those, as she did, sure. I have to be very specific what types of foods, but for the general mass of the population, it's the easiest health food ever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a raw food.
Yep.
And I don't think people get enough raw foods in their diet. Right.
Living foods.
Yeah. And because normally things are cooked. Right. And so with that, you lose certain properties. And so microgreens are a easy way to get that raw living yep. food into your diet. So I started growing in March of this year, and quickly grew outside of the capacity of my upstairs hallway closet.
You do.
And I should show you some of the pictures.
Yeah, I'd be interested.
Sometime. And then I had to take over the downstairs living room.
Yep. I think everyone does that. They're just like, I'll figure it out when I need to. And then they don't realize how quickly they'll need to, because they're such a popular commodity, because they're now in the mainstream purview. Most people have at least heard of microgreens, especially in a trendy and fine dining food and bev place as Asheville.
Yep.
People almost expect them at this point, if you go out, or expect there to be a reliable home delivery service, because it is... because of where it is. It's that type of natural foods, high value clientele.
Yeah. I just came across some material. It is a market analysis by a marketing organization. And they predicted by 2028, the microgreen sector is roughly going to double.
I'm sure. Yeah.
In size.
Yeah, I mean, there's more vendors, and it accelerates, even since I've been in it, which is only 4 or 5 years, rapidly. The amount of people that know about them and are growing them almost doubles every year. And obviously that's not sales-wise, but when I first started, I was just giving samples to people, and they were just like, what are these? And now they're just like, oh, cool, you grow micros. Like,
yeah,
there's
yeah.
no explanation, sometimes still. But at least in Asheville, people are just like, oh yeah, someone used to grow these. They've usually been exposed.
Yeah, at one point or
at
another.
One point,
every once in a while, I'll come across somebody who's like, what is that?
Right. Or those like, fun ones like, too, because then you get to unload your enthusiasm.
Right. Yeah. And I'll tell you, I think there's some skepticism with the power of sulforaphane. And so I go to farmers markets and... So what I've done is I've curated a list of research from PubMed and similar sources so that I can say, don't take my word for it. Here, just look at the evidence.
Yeah, I'll put a video below this podcast on. I did a whole video up at the grow room and just went through probably the 10 most popular claims in the studies. So yeah, it's there. It's easy to find.
Yeah.
And they're powerful, and not everything as potent as sulforaphane, but things you wouldn't expect. Like amaranth had like some of the highest vitamin and mineral content. We don't have amaranth growing here, but beets are pretty similar. Everything here is more potent than its mature vegetable counterpart, because all of the nutrition is packed into the plant, and you have 100 plants in a tray. So you're getting the nutrition of growing 100 plants.
Yeah, so... thank you. One way that I like to describe it is if you look at a trend line from seed to fully grown vegetable, the size certainly increases. Mm-hmm. You got the seed, you've got the sprout, microgreen, baby green, the fully grown vegetable, roughly.
Yeah.
There might be a stage.
I've heard macro green for the baby green, as in once the first true leaf or second true leaf, depending on the plant, comes out. People call it a macro green, and I was like, sure, whatever, guys.
Okay, all right, sure, I'll go with that. And so the size increases, the nutritional density does not.
Right.
It actually peaks at the microgreen stage and goes down from there.
Yeah, one plant has all it's going to have, antioxidant capacity-wise, vitamin and mineral-wise, at that stage. And then it just gets dispersed throughout the plant. So at this stage, you're just getting... hyper concentrated amount.
Yeah.
So it's all the benefit flavor without any of the chewiness, toughness, sliminess, all the things people usually have an issue with veggies with.
Yeah.
None of those issues.
Yeah. Well, what I like to, I like the minimalist movement.
Yeah.
I mean, too. Simplicity, right? What do they say? Simplicity is the ultimate form of sophistication.
Yeah.
So Buddhist or not Buddhist, Eastern Asian, Japanese, architecture, you know, all that appeals to me. And so with that, the microgreens are just find their place into that kind of mindset, that lifestyle, that appreciation, because you don't have to eat as much.
Right.
So if I don't eat as much now, I mean, I intermittent fast quite often.
Yeah.
And so when I do eat, I'm eating only the most healthy foods.
Yeah. You're looking for all micronutrient organic density. Right.
Yeah. And so I can get that when I do eat, I'm getting a power pack punch of all the nutrients that I need.
Right.
And that is one of the struggles as a faster or somebody who's like appealing or, trying to, you know, adapt to a particular diet is missing out on certain nutrients.
Yep.
And
that's the issue the carnivore community ran into. And I actually ended up selling to a lot of people who were doing carnivore. They wanted to cover the micronutrient base without having to deal with all of the things that they were trying to eliminate, fiber for the time, or just the amount of sugar calories or carbohydrate calories, any of that. So this is the perfect, for some reason, complement to carnivore, because you cover all your micronutrient bases without any of the normal things associated with vegetables. And that's kind of what I'm doing at the moment. I'm basically just animal based at the moment and just throwing some micros and some citrus in there. And it's,
oh, nice.
You're not hungry, like you said, whenever you're doing a lot of intermittent fasting. So whenever you do eat, you're like, I should probably get as much in here to cover the bases as possible.
For sure, for sure. And so adding on to that, vegans, it's hard to do keto and intermittent fast. Make sure that you're getting all the nutrients you need as a vegan, particularly the amino acids.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's, as a vegan, there's, I'm not a vegan. I dabble. I'm more of a vegetarian.
I've been vegan.
It's hard to get the amino acids and other things, but sunflower in particular, goji berries, but sunflower in particular have 8 of the 9 amino acids.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's relatively uncommon.
It is. There's very few plant sources that have them all, and there's even fewer that have them in the correct ratio for even muscle building or things like that. Have the branch chains in the correct amounts, and there's a few. But hemp is one of them. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
There's a couple that are full. But yeah, it's like you said, you have to pay attention if you're doing a specific eating pattern. Veganism or carnivore, any of those, you actually have to think about it.
Yep.
It's not a given anymore if you're not eating a diversified amount of food multiple times a day. Mm-hmm. You're like, it'll probably slip in there at some point.
Mm-hmm.
No, you have to think about it now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So microgreens, eat them with every meal.
Yeah.
I don't use lettuce anymore.
I do use lettuce.
Yeah, yep. Tell me why.
Because sometimes, and this is what I mentioned with the autoimmune things, sometimes you don't want to have to trigger your immune system via antioxidants. So lettuce provides you the chlorophyll, the stem cells that come with eating living food. You know, I just cut it out of my garden. Vitamins and minerals. If you don't want the overdose, not overdose, but if you don't want that potency of antioxidants because you're already dealing with some amount of inflammation, that's when that comes in handy. So carnivore was doing that for a while. They were just doing, it was meat and greens. So the greens tended to be lettuce and then a little citrus for just to get your vitamin C covered until people figured out about liver, that liver's got vitamin C in it. But there are such specific contexts around food that most people's eyes glaze over if you go to that level. You're just like, sometimes you don't want a lot of antioxidants if you're having these issues. But for anyone not doing that specific journey, I used to eat them with every meal, and I still eat them with most meals. I just started growing in my house again. They're also the perfect gift. No one ever is upset if you give them microgreens. They're just like, oh, these are cool. I mean, they just look cool. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't want to eat them, you can re-gift them, but the colors, the various aesthetics are fantastic. They hit all of the boxes. Even people that don't like veggies like something about them.
Mm-hmm.
They look good on anything.
Yeah, I would agree. I like to tell people that you can grow virtually any vegetable or herb as a microgreen.
Nightshades are tricky. Have you tried?
I have not.
Tomatoes?
I tried some
peppers, tomatoes,
some butternut squash, and those didn't turn out so good.
No, the prickly ones. So cucumbers, touchy one too, just because it gets prickly, kind of like sunflower, so quickly.
Yeah. Okay.
And any of the nightshades, just because it takes so long to germinate.
Yeah.
And to grow, but most herbs, all the brassicas, chard and beet, and most things are super easy. And the thing I love about it is I was dating, it was a new relationship, and she wanted pesto, and it was the middle of the winter. Mm. And she was just bummed because she's got a craving for pesto. And I was like, why can't we have pesto? And she's like, because it's January. And I was like, give me 3 weeks. So I just seeded a couple trays of basil, which you got growing down here. And in 3 weeks, you have basil, and it has the full flavor effect of regular Genovese Italian basil. So we just made pesto. It's like cheating. You get the full flavor of any vegetable without waiting 3 or 4 months.
Yeah. And sometimes I would say it's even more pronounced, right? or possibly less pronounced.
Depends on how much you use at once. Like if you're using three trays of basil, that's a whole bunch of basil plants, right? So it definitely could be.
Yeah. I'm playing around with some cantaloupe right now.
Oh, cool.
And so it's got a really, I just took it out of germination, and it's got a really nice sweet smell.
Yeah.
And I tasted one today, and it's
that's
sweet. Yeah. It tastes like cantaloupe.
Yeah. There's some weird ones. Cantaloupe that people wouldn't think about. Popcorn.
That
was a weird one.
Yeah.
It doesn't need any light, but it's so sweet.
Yeah.
Just because it's a sweet corn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you just eat the shoot. There's whole bunch of bamboo you can do it with. There's a bunch of weird ones.
I'd be curious to try hemp.
People have tried hemp. It's expensive. That's why people don't do it, just because the seed cost, but it's really cool to grow. It's kind of like nasturtiums, like they're just expensive seeds and they're big, so you don't get a ton. But yeah, if you let it get to about that big, very, very cool and full aroma. So yeah, put it, restaurants would, I'm sure, be interested in that, just to either put it on a dessert or pair it with something that they already have CBD or hemp in.
Mm,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Especially in Nashville.
You've got these little boutique cafes that are popping up now that CBD and probably eventually THC is going to become legalized.
Yeah.
These little cafes are popping up, and I'm sure it's just a matter of time before they start offering some food like hemp snacks.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple that do. So we have an elixir bar in town in West Asheville that has a pretty wide variety of CBD and hemp products, and the flavors are pretty pronounced.
Is that the one next to JB Media on Haywood?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. I've jogged past there a few times.
They have really, really good artisan local food. I was kind of surprised.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I was wondering about that.
Grape cheeses and everything.
Nice.
High quality food for a small shop.
Do like charcuterie boards?
Yep, all of it.
Nice.
Full Asheville ensemble. Yeah,
everything. Outstanding. Speaking of charcuterie boards, there's a the Asheville Cheese Co.
I just saw a billboard
right across
that.
The street from Green Man Brewing. I think it is.
Yeah.
I've been meaning to go in there. I just haven't had the opportunity.
Bring them some micros.
Yeah.
I mean,
right?
It pairs well with that. That's the flavors pair well. The aesthetics pair well. All of those types of meat and cheese and those types of boards
go
perfectly with microgreens.
Yeah, and you got the living, you got the dairy, you got the meat,
all the food
and then
groups.
You got the living.
Right.
It's fully complementary.
Yep.
It's a full package.
Yeah. So are you using all LEDs?
I am. Okay. Yeah. I do not use fluorescent.
It's not unusually hot in here, so I can't imagine what it would be like if they were all fluorescents, cranking out another 10 degrees.
Oh, yeah. And then my electricity bill, I'm sure it'd be a lot higher.
It would be different. Yeah. And you haven't noticed any, I mean, you said you went through, which course did you go through?
I went through two, like online, like two courses.
I went
through two different courses. I went through the Curtis Stone's course. It was like maybe three years ago, four years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
And then there's a relatively recent course by Jonah Kremelschnick out of Toronto, California, Living Earth Farms. So I feel like that's taken it to a whole nother level.
For sure. Yeah.
And so, I just finished that course and there's always something new to learn. And I'll tell you, over these past 5-6 months, I have learned so much. Yeah. I mean, my life revolves around this.
Right. Well, like you said, it's like having children. And the beauty of microgreens that my Justin, my growing partner, said was if you make a mistake, it only costs you 10 days. Mm-hmm. So just the generations turn over so quickly. Yeah. It's all trial and error. Like even if you try something new, if you change humidity, if you change soil, watering level, there's only so many variables, but they affect everything so drastically. Mm-hmm. You have, if it doesn't work, it only doesn't work for 10 days and then you can try again. So the trial and error process is so speedy. So it's encouraging people to always keep experimenting.
You're failing fast.
You're failing fast.
You want to fail fast. You want to fail forward, right? Yeah. Microgreens give you the opportunity to fail fast. Yeah. So you got, I mean, if you're looking at a 7-day grow cycle, you got 52 cycles per year that you can fail.
Right.
Feasibly.
Yeah. So you learn a lot very quickly, like you said, and it's a constant learning process. Like we were talking about earlier, even the smallest change in growing media, coco usually doesn't change that much, but batch by batch it can, or watering levels or ambient humidity, temperature, airflow. There's not that many variables, but if any one of them change more than like 10%, you're going to see some ripple, some repercussion.
Right.
So you always have to be very, very quick on your feet because things grow quickly, but they go down quickly too. So if you don't pay attention for a day or two.
So it's a great feedback loop.
Yeah. Right.
Right. So you know almost immediately what's happening. And so when you're working with all these different variables, you shift one, it creates a ripple effect.
Yeah.
But you shift many of them, you've got multiple ripple effects. And so it can be difficult to really zone in on what a problem might be. Yeah. So for example, when I moved from my living room, let's just go back further from there. When I started in my hallway closet and then moved down to my living room, totally different environment, totally different variables. The temperature downstairs versus the temperature upstairs, the humidity downstairs, the humidity upstairs, the airflow, you know, all these things really have a way of affecting, you know, how much you should water,
right?
How little you should water.
Density.
The seeding density. Right.
That's what I always tell people. It's not that the plants aren't resilient. It's that this is a very unnatural growing environment. You just shoved 100 plus plants in a single area. So you have very little wiggle room, not a lot of buffer. So everything has to be pretty stable for them to be happy. Same thing as if people get shoved into like a subway. If anything goes wrong, it goes wrong real fast because there's so much in a tight area. Same thing with microgreens. You're just playing with things that don't exist in nature. Obviously, microgreens do, but not at the densities to make the business model profitable.
Right. Yeah, right, for sure.
Yeah, but it's so cool. And that's what I tell people when they start growing. The only warning I give, other than you should definitely do it because it's easy and it's food in a week, is if you're going to actually grow microgreens consistently and try to get this many in a tray, you have to be precise, meaning you have to pay attention to everything because the process is easy. Life happens by itself, but because it's such a, because the environment is such that it is, you have to pay attention to very small details because things happen on such a quick timeline, and you have to be a very, very efficient problem solver if things go downhill. If you're not just growing a tray for yourself next to a window, but if you invest in a rack and lights, you're like, I'm going to do this to feed myself, my family, and to give to neighbors or something, and maybe even start a small business. You have to pay attention, catalog things, make notes. It has to be a gig.
Yeah. There comes a point when you have to start taking it seriously. Right. You start taking record and investing in software specifically designed for forecasting microgreen.
Yeah.
And yeah.
What's been the biggest barrier, or I should say, what's been your biggest barrier to, whatever your version of success is, and then what's been the biggest surprise you didn't know that was coming that brought you the most joy from it? other than finding clients, because that's always
you talk about it when it comes to microgreens.
Yeah, yeah.
The biggest barrier to success. I think making that commitment, the hesitancy to go all in, just not knowing that this is going to pan out. It took me a little while to get to that point, but like I said, I have some amazing people in my corner,
right.
and so with that goes some intrinsically valuable moral support.
Yeah.
And so I've been able to believe in myself through the help of others.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, that's probably been the biggest barrier is just myself, really. Believing in myself.
Always is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's been my biggest struggle, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from that, my biggest joy is that...
Yeah, the thing you didn't expect that just makes you super happy, or that wasn't in the plan, and you're like, I'm gonna find joy from this. Something that happens to you on either a daily basis when you're talking to people about it, or just something that happened in your journey growing up, and you're like, oh, that's awesome. Didn't see that coming.
I guess I didn't see the connection between microgreens and children.
Right.
And so I've always had a affinity for the childlike nature, and the childlike nature in all of us, really. We may have covered that up, may have gotten serious and grown up, but it's there. And just finding that connection with children and microgreens. And my daughter, she was a very influential part of that. Mm-hmm. My mentor from Mountain Biz Works, Gabriella Maruski. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do this without you, Gabriella.
The support around this area is fantastic for agriculture. So
shout out
to ASAP, Appalachian Sustainable Agriculture Project, and
Mountain Biz Works
and all of the various bountiful cities. Asheville has around it probably the most robust supportive network of growers, farmers, just anyone interested in regenerative ag or sustainability that I've ever seen.
Mm.
And I'm sure there's places that have more, but it probably is on par with major cities. Just, I've never seen so much interest around sustainable agriculture, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I think there's a melting pot
here.
There's a sort of like a critical mass that we're reaching here. There's a draw from all across the United States, people to come here. And I think that's one of it,
mm-hmm.
one of those draws. There's a number of others, but that's something that I'm really grateful for. But going back to the connection with children, that's something that I remember my mom, she would say, Jessa, you would say that when you were a little baby, you took the sprouts and you would say, sprouts is hair, sprouts is hair. And so the way I see it is that microgreens, sprouts, they have a playful and lighthearted quality to them, which make them accessible for children. I ate them as a baby, and my daughter eats them. And she won't eat broccoli, but she will eat microgreens.
Mm-hmm. Sam. Yep. That's what I've heard from friends and their kids, and they're very picky kids. They're just like, they don't eat vegetables, but they'll eat microgreens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a game changer.
Yeah. Oftentimes microgreens, while they can be more vibrant or amplified in the flavor, they can also be more subtle.
Yeah.
So she doesn't like broccoli, but she will eat the broccoli microgreens. They're more flavor neutral. Yes. They still have a nutty quality
mild,
to them.
For sure.
They're mild, right.
Yeah.
Sunflower microgreens are also, kids also like those. Yeah. I've seen some recipes where people are taking sunflowers and dipping them in chocolate.
Yep.
So There's a nice, because the sunflowers have a real nutty,
they do, like oily, quality. Nutty, rich.
Yeah. Yes. And also like a peanut butter and jelly, yes, sunflower. I haven't tried that yet because I try to stay away from carbs.
Oh, do you?
But well, I think there is going to come a point when I need to do that. And actually, I've been thinking hard about, because I frequent some farmers markets in the area. Gladheart Farmers Market on Laurel Lane, 9 Laurel Lane.
Oh, yeah, we'll plug them. So that's a new Asheville Farmers Market, and they have pretty high quality vendors, and it just started this year. So that's in Oakley in East Asheville, if you're local to Western North Carolina, on Sundays from 10 to 3.
11 to 3.
11 to 3.
Yep.
Yeah, and there you'll find a whole bunch of interesting vendors there. They're building a new Herba Mate factory. And I'll be there with a couple of my business partners. There is a living water booth, which I'll be there. And that link will be down in the show notes as well. But tons of farmers, tailgate markets. So the farmer, this is the only place that has the distinction between tailgate market and farmer's market. Farmer's market here is permanent vendors who set up, like in the WNC Ag Center, who are there every day and aren't necessarily growing the food themselves. They're just a reseller. So the tailgate markets are where the farmers come in from all around Asheville, set up, you know, that's why it's a tailgate. They just flop down their tailgate, put up a canopy, and sell their fresh food. So yeah, this has an abundance of markets.
For sure. Yeah. How did we get to that point?
Gladheart.
Gladheart, why Gladheart?
I know, I always go off on tangents, I apologize.
Yeah. I was thinking really hard about incorporating, because one of the struggles of selling microgreens is the educational component. People have to learn about microgreens, and once they learn about that microgreens exist, they have to find a way to incorporate them into their diets. Uh-huh. And people look at these microgreens and they're like, well, what do you do with it?
Throw them on literally anything.
Exactly. Yeah. Just sprinkle them on whatever.
Right. And anything that's not hot, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sandwiches.
But you can still do it on soup.
You can do it on soup. Yeah. Pea is fantastic. Pea shoots are fantastic for soups because they wilt, but the peas, you're not going for antioxidants or anything of that potent nature. You're going for probably the vitamins, minerals, protein, fiber. So it retains all that.
Yeah, and I mean, even if you don't want to be so zealous about your health, you can still cook the microgreens if you want. Yeah,
just throw them in at the end, they'll wilt a little bit, they still look great.
Throw them in your stir fries, you know, saute them up. I mean, it's still, you're not losing all the nutrient.
Yes. However you will get it into your food supply, do that. It will take.
Just do what you can. Right. Do what you can, and the rest will take care of itself.
Right.
And then eventually you're gonna build upon that, and you're gonna
start wherever you are. Yeah. Context is everything. You don't have to. This is something, like you said, it's simple. It does not need to be overcomplicated. Like kohlrabi, you're like, what do I do with this? It's the thing that everyone has in their CSA box in the spring, whenever there's a lull before summer hits and before the greens start pumping, people get kohlrabi and they're like, I have no idea what to do with this. And you're like, however you will get it into your mouth, that's what you do with it. Like, there's just only so many ways you can prepare it.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So again, the, being able to educate is a challenge. And so at the farmer's market, I see that as a prime opportunity because you're having these face-to-face interactions with people who are pretty much your primary demographic.
Yeah, they're there.
These are people who are connected into the community, and they value local. They value organic, and so what I was thinking is including preparing some food.
Yeah,
making some microgreen salads for people. Making some microgreen peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for people.
Value added.
Yeah, to give people that way in, so they can experience it for themselves. But going back to the children aspect, that's something that I really want to incorporate into my business model. And so, with that said, I'm planning a rebrand to a different name that I don't want to share it on here because I'm trying to keep
Yeah, we've chatted about it.
Yeah, you, can release, you know what I'm talking
you,
about.
Yeah, yeah. Release it whenever you feel called to it. It's a great name.
Yeah, yeah, and I think children, I know children feel the same yes. way, because every time I mention it, I get a, you know, the eyes light up, yep. there's a big smile and a vigorous nodding.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I like that name. And so...
It's still staying with the Sprout culture vibe.
Yeah.
It's not a huge move away from
it. No, it's not. One thing that I really wanted in a name was a way to segue into my story.
Yeah.
And so Sprout culture allows me to do that. And I value that name. But if I'm putting children first here... And I am doing that. Yeah. I'm going to be marketing to them.
Well, you have a whole, you're pushing schools. So you're trying to get larger institutional education facilities.
Right.
These in there just because that's the easy way to nutrition. So kids need them the most.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it ties back into my previous business, Plastic Fantastic Kenya, creating that next generation of conscious consumer.
Yep.
That's, I see myself achieving that same objective here, but more so from a health consciousness standpoint.
Yep.
Planting those seeds of health consciousness early on in their life. So with that said, I'm going to be giving a talk at the St. Gerard House
yes.
in Hendersonville.
That's so cool.
And at the beginning of September. And so I'm going to have the opportunity to share the wonderful world of microgreens with these kids. And
that's awesome.
And so, yeah, I'm just super, super excited, super happy to have come so far
yeah.
in such a short period of time.
Since March. Yeah, that's an accelerated. Yeah.
I mean, I'm operating now out of a 1,030 square foot grow space.
Yeah.
So I moved from my upstairs hallway closet yeah. down to my living room, much to the dismay of my family.
Yeah.
And then
right.
into a refrigerated grow space, a dedicated grow room yeah. that allows me to maintain a consistent temperature, humidity, airflow year round.
Yeah.
So that is one thing that one value that I bring to the table is that consistent quality.
Yeah.
And with that said, I mean, there's a lot of space to fill here. There's
yeah.
a lot of microgreens that I can get in here. And
whenever you get bored of microgreens, I'm going to bug you about mushrooms, because it's also the exact same growth space for gourmet mushrooms.
It was used.
Well, I'm sure. Yeah.
It was actually perfect space for it.
Oh, yeah. That's right. It was Asheville Fungi.
I don't know. I don't know the name. I don't know the
Chris
name
Parker?
Of the.
I'm pretty sure this was.
I know Chris Parker. Yeah, but I don't know if it was him or not.
I don't know.
For a time yeah. that they were growing some mushrooms in here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, also funny story. Completing cycles. Whenever I pulled up, so I learned to grow microgreens next door. That was my first exposure. I was weekend watering for Sunburst Chef and Farmer, and just observing everything. And I was like, wait. This doesn't look that complicated. I might be able to do this. And then I binged. At the time, there weren't courses. So I just like poured through Curtis Stone, Microgreens Farmer. Oh, I'm going to forget names. A couple of like three or four different channels. Waiting for them to say a seed density. And a couple of them did. Because there weren't courses. There weren't just like, do this, 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 this.
Yeah.
For broccoli, sunflower, pea, radish. It
yeah.
wasn't just... as easily, like, I put those guides out for free. I don't have the, 100 of them, but I'll, you know, I give the top 10 common ones for free just so people can grow them, because that's the barrier. But you had to dig through all of the content
mm-hmm.
that was available
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and just listen for, be like, I just used 1,500 grams over 10 trays. And you're like, thank you. Okay. 150 grams tray. Right. Got it.
What's your problem?
But it wasn't, that's the problem when you're starting. It's just like, I don't want to spend 3 months trial and erroring.
Mm-hmm.
So give me something to work off of.
Yeah.
But so coming here today, that completes the cycle with with my microgreen experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
5 years later.
Kind of back to.
Got it back.
Kind of, you're back to
right
where you started.
Next door. Yep.
Yeah. 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 Charles and Sally of Sunburst.
Yeah.
Chef and Farmer. They've been great, because I had the opportunity to connect with them here in this space and just revisit their challenges mm-hmm. as business owners running. I think they were They must have been the largest micrograin vendor here in Asheville.
They were in our radius.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So they were in Highlands. Correct. It was probably pumping out nowhere near your father's, but it might have been the biggest volume in town.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were. That's a massive greenhouse.
Yeah.
And they were crushing it.
Yeah.
They had lots of staff. Aquaponics too. They had hydroponic lettuce and aquaponic herbs. I learned a lot. That's why I was working for them, because all of those things were in my wheelhouse and still are. Aquaponics, hydroponics, but the microgreens were there's no barrier. Like you said, you're just like, wait, I could get a rack and start playing with this. You don't need to buy float tanks. You don't need to buy tubs, fish, have plumbing issues. Buy a rack, start playing.
Yeah. Sunlight, light, a light source.
Yep.
And seeds and water and
the basis of life, and that's it.
Yeah,
you're playing with the raw fundamentals.
I mean, you could feasibly grow without a soil.
You can grow on burlaps just hard,
or you just a wire mesh tray,
or aeroponic it. Right, you can just spray things at the roots.
Right,
something, but the buffer for the buffer for error is so small.
Yeah, right. It'll dry out really quick. Correct. I've experimented doing that, and I appreciate using the coir
because
you don't have to be.
That's so what I always say.
Careful.
Even with peat, I'm just like, sometimes I don't want to be there all the time to watch them. So if you're worried about something drying out, like I was just in South Carolina for a day and a half, almost 2 days, and I have some growing in my house. So I just watered them heavily before I left. Fine. When I got back, because I grow in coconut core potting soil, so it's even got more moisture retentive.
Mm-hmm.
It's got some earthworm castings and some guano in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it holds moisture very well, enough so that they were just starting to get a little droopy 2 days later. And, you know, obviously airflow and ambient temperature are a thing. If you're in a greenhouse, that's not going to be possible. But yeah, if you're in controlled environment, core is very forgiving.
Yeah.
As forgiving as you're going to get.
Yeah.
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 And that might be a little too much info for a lot of people listening, but if anyone listening wants to learn how to grow micros, we have full tutorials out. So I'll put all the links at the bottom of this. But if you want to experiment in a window, under any lights, really, I've got full tutorials, because it is such a useful skill to feed yourself and just to have something cool to give to people, and just introduction to nutrition for all sources, and you get addicted to it. So then you foray into other things and you're like, oh, let me try sprouting. Let me try mushrooms. Let me try bees, anything else.
Mm.
You just get addicted to being around life, cultivating life.
Mm. Yeah.
Anything else that you wanted to add?
Not that's coming to mind right now.
Well, that was plenty.
Yeah.
Where can people find you? They can find you through me. So I have plenty of info out there. I'm easy to get a hold of.
Yeah.
And I'm in contact with you every week. But if they wanted to chat with you directly, other than email, which I'll put below this, any Thanks. Socials.
Okay. Yeah. Sprout Culture Living Foods.
Instagram.
Instagram, yeah. Facebook. Those are the only two social media platforms I use currently.
Yeah.
Do a Google search for Sprout Culture Asheville.
Yeah.
And you'll find my business listing. It's got my phone number, the hours that I'm here. Just reach out to me over the phone. Send me an email. Google My Business also offers the opportunity to send a message.
Yes.
Which you can do that, or you can do it through Facebook, whatever.
Okay.
You can find my products at French Broad.
Yeah. Food Co-op in Asheville.
Right now they're the only microgreens on the shelf.
Yes.
I think they're the only microgreens on the shelf in all of the grocery stores in Asheville.
That's probably true.
I've been to Fresh Market. I've been to Earth Fair, Whole Foods. They've got sprouts, but no microgreens.
Whole Foods does.
Okay. I mean, they do flimsy. Carry them,
right.
But they're,
they get wiped
city
out.
Roots. Yeah.
Right.
They're almost
not local.
Never there.
It's true. Yeah. For some reason, it is not as saturated a commodity in grocery stores as you think it would be, and as they are in farmers markets. Like, everyone will have them in a farmers market, but in a grocery store, it's almost hard to find, which shouldn't be the case. So we'll fill that gap.
Find me at the French Broad Food Co-op, find me at the Glad Heart Farmers Market, or just swing by the Sprout House, as I call it, on Smith Mill Works property.
It's a cool location.
I would like to take that opportunity to plug them. Michael Klatt has been an amazing property manager, and he's made me feel very welcome moving into this space. And this is a 24-acre growing community. We have vendors like Mother Earth Food, who's a farm-to-doorstep delivery service.
Massive organic delivery service, aggregator and delivery.
We've got some other, some new vendors that just moved in, Bella Decor, which I think they sell plants, and just Asheville Craft Cannabis, or Asheville Craft Hemp. I can't remember. I think it's Asheville Craft Cannabis, also is based here, and hopefully a lot more vendors are coming in soon, because there is a lot of space.
Yeah, there's
a lot
plenty of infrastructure.
Greenhouses that are just ready to be used. Oh, the Asheville Organic School is also holding classes here. Just right outside my growth space.
Well, you might be doing a microgreen class pretty soon for them.
Yeah,
because it's right here.
That would be great.
No reason not to.
Aside from that, no, I don't really have much else to share.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your time.
Oh yeah, thank you.
And we'll do more in the future, and I'll probably be here way more than you want me to.
I love it.